We're going to start the podcast. And I'm Gloria from the heart of the city, San Diego, born and raised here in San Diego. And basically, I'm just a local podcaster interviewing people that are doing, you know, crazy, amazing, unique things here in the city. I found Elias just by scrolling around on Facebook, and we have similar friends.
Yeah.
So he knows Eddie and some of the people down at the National City Clergy.
Yes.
and then some of the other gyms and people around. I know other jiu-jitsu instructors as
okay.
well. And then I was following him, and I was listening to some of his stories and some of his speaking and things. And I was like, this guy with all these tattoos has some really crazy stories, but they're also very inspirational and very life transformational as well. And I wanted to kind of, as I was studying him and, you know, seeing what he did and stuff, and you know, kind of his personality,
sure.
to see, you know, if you were good to come on a camera. I was like, this guy's a pro. He already got it down. He already knows what he's doing. And so I am, like, so excited to be here with Elias Gallegos. And Elias, I reading your story and stuff, and I, you know what, I do want to do, like, kind of an introduction.
Sure, of course,
well.
Yeah.
I don't want to skip that over because it's kind of really important. It's a super cool thing there. And it says, Elias Gallegos was born and raised in San Diego to parents who are pastors. Wow. Throughout his youth, he routinely got into trouble and found himself in jail.
Yeah.
At age 16, super young. For armed robbery. As a young adult, he became a bodyguard and kidnapped for drug dealers. Dang, dude. There was a time when he didn't think he would even live to be 30. Now at the age of 45, he is the head of one of the biggest associations in jiu-jitsu, the Gallegos Jiu-Jitsu Association. He founded the Alliance Eastlake Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit that mentors, counsels, and gives free training to local law enforcement.
Yes.
He has 2 degrees, one in theology and the other in counseling. And he spends his time now giving back to his community in any way he can. So, Elias, tell us, like, a little bit of your story, and, you know, start from kind of like the beginning, and, you know, we want to really get to know, like, where it all kind of, like, began.
I guess it all began, like, I can trace it back to me getting in trouble in the 10th grade and running away from home, committing an armed robbery, and my life significantly being impacted by going to jail for about a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Wow.
And that just really changed my life in the sense that now I'm on my own, I'm away from my family, I'm away from everybody that loved me, and I have to kind of fend for myself.
Mm.
And because of that, when I got into that program, things got significantly worse in the sense that I didn't come out a better person. I came out knowing how to do things worse. I met people that I shouldn't probably have ever met. Mm. And from that, I could really pinpoint that leading my way into becoming a bodyguard and a kidnapper for drug dealers, just from that simple point in my life. You know?
Yeah, wow, that's insane. Like, so you're saying that you went into a program and then you, like, learned all this, all
yeah.
the streetwise.
Yes,
you're getting more streetwise.
Yeah, I walked into this program and I met these people that I probably shouldn't have, and because of that, I came out with a better understanding of how to do bad, worse things,
worse
I guess.
Things,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Let me grab a napkin. Can I grab a napkin?
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Come
on. Go for it.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we're sitting here in his dojo now. Dojo, is that the right
yeah,
word?
Academy dojo, yeah. Academy dojo.
It is academy. And You know, I was really curious because you wrote here that your parents were pastors.
Yeah, yeah.
So
So here's what ended up happening is that at a really early age, and I just started sharing this like in the past 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. but at an early age, I was molested by an uncle and a teacher. And growing up in a Latino community, in a Latino household,
yeah.
where everything is about being a man, mm-hmm. you know, in the Latino yeah. community, everything's about being a man.
Yeah.
And being so embarrassed mm-hmm. that this was happening to me, being so embarrassed that a person who thought he was a tough kid, that this was happening to me, I acted out, mm-hmm. you know. I was a bully. I was getting in trouble because I didn't know why this was happening to me. I didn't know how to deal with the effects of what was happening to me, mm-hmm. emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew why the son of the pastors or the son of these preachers who became pastors, nobody knew why this kid was acting out.
Mm-hmm.
All they knew was that, you know, I got labeled a troublemaker kid. Like, this kid's a troublemaker. This kid, mm-hmm. why, you know, good for nothing. And what ended up happening is I fed into that, and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm gonna be a troublemaker. I'm gonna be the biggest troublemaker I can ever be,
mm-hmm.
because what's happening to me, I never want that to happen to me again.
Yeah.
And for years, I suppressed that childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny, Gloria, is I even forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the effects of what happened to me, wouldn't let me forget about it for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And it would rear its ugly head every once in a while.
Yeah.
And it caused, I'm not gonna say it caused me, but mm-hmm. because of that, it led me to addiction. It led me to pornography. It led me to a self-destructive mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I've yeah. only begun to deal with that recently. Like, now I'm 45, and yeah. I've only begun to deal with that recently in the past 4 or 5 years. So,
yeah. I mean, the first way that you deal with it is by sharing it.
Yeah.
Admitting
yeah,
it.
For sure. And that was the struggle. The biggest struggle for me was being somebody who is in the fight community, in the jiu-jitsu community, in the jiu-jitsu world.
Yeah.
And when I finally stepped forward and talked about that and shared about that,
yeah.
man, there's no scarier feeling. There's no scarier
yeah.
feeling than, what
yeah.
are my peers yeah. going to think of me? What are my students
yeah.
going to think of me? What are my sons going to think about me?
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah.
I'm very thankful that I have a loving support system.
Yeah.
I have loving students. Who supported me through that,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, Gloria, I'm still dealing with the trauma of what happened to me, but I'm able now to better understand why I made decisions
mm-hmm.
in the way that I did throughout my life, throughout my history. Like, I can go back and pinpoint, okay, I see why I did this, I see why I did that, because I'm trying to cope with this, and this,
mm-hmm.
and I never got therapy, I never got professional help for it,
mm-hmm.
and so imagine
mm-hmm.
I'm a little kid,
yeah.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to cope with things myself because I don't want to share what happened.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But I bet in sharing, you found out that a lot of these other tough guys, they
100%. So you know how
yeah.
you talked about how you were kind of following me, and then you
yeah.
saw that, I every once in a while I do like a motivational thing here and there.
Yeah.
One time, because of what happened to me, I suffered from severe depression, you know,
yeah.
and I would self-medicate. And
mm-hmm.
so one time I just made a post on Facebook that said something like, hey,
mm-hmm.
if you're suffering from depression, so do I. You know, not everybody's perfect. Everything's gonna have my life together. Blah, blah, blah. Come and train for free, right? And Gloria, you'd be surprised at how many professional MMA fighters, high-level jiu-jitsu guys, just people out of the woodwork, sent me private messages saying, hey, Professor, hey, Elias, thank you so much for sharing. I'm going through the exact same thing. And
yeah.
because you, like, thank you.
Right.
And that was kind of like the little ding, you know, that was like, whoa.
Yeah.
All I made was a small little presentation on Facebook or social media.
Mm-hmm.
What if I put some thought into it? What if I poured into that a little bit more?
Mm-hmm.
How many more people could I help? How many more people can I kind of bring out of that shell?
Yeah.
And just kind of, we could all be on this journey together of healing. Because I think,
yeah.
I'm not lying, I feel like everybody that's listening, everybody that I come in contact with,
mm-hmm.
is dealing with something. They're going into something, they're in something, or they're coming out of something.
Yeah.
And if we all, like, if I took their hand and if they took my hand and we kind of went through these things together,
mm-hmm.
I think the world would be a much better place, a much safer place,
mm-hmm.
you know?
But yeah.
I think embarrassment
mm-hmm.
and not under a misunderstanding of what's happened to us, I think that
yeah.
affects our mindset and
yeah.
our timing on coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, the camaraderie in that is so important. You know, I didn't grow up in church, and I come from a really crazy home. My parents were not Christian. My dad was a biker, and he was an ex-convict. He did 10 years in San Quentin. And my mom was, you know, she was an alcoholic. She recovered 45 years, I think, something like that now. Her and my aunt, so I'm so proud of them, because I didn't ever do drugs or anything. Like, I got in a little bit of trouble, but not like big trouble or anything. But, you know, because they broke this kind of a generational thing,
right,
which is what you're doing today.
Right.
And it took, imagine the embarrassment that they have to admit to, you know, I've seen what they've done.
Right.
You know, my dad's not with us anymore, but, you know, my mom and talking with her and even the conversations that we have today, you know, I have to reassure her that I don't see her like that. Like,
right.
I don't see her as that person. They're like two different people. Like, yes, I went through that. I've seen what you did. And I acknowledge that. But you are not that.
Right.
And so people have the ability to do that when you start to admit or start to open up.
Right. There's like a freeing, there's a freeing sensation that when you begin to share, as difficult as it is, the healing process begins. And I think because people are afraid to share, that healing, for a lot of people, the healing process never even starts.
Yeah.
And like I said, for me, it was very, very scary coming to terms with finding, you know, I think one of the hardest things was me admitting to my father last year. I only openly admitted to my father what my uncle did to me last year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that trauma, Gloria, was like deep rooted, like in the pit of my stomach. And when I released that, there was a weight, there was a, I just can't even begin to explain that. But the healing process started. The healing process started.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'm so glad that you shared. You know, I'm so glad I'm so glad that I seen you around on Facebook and things like that, because, you know, it is important, like to the highest level, you know, for men, because I have a friend that I was on his podcast too, Dave Daly. He talks about, you know, he's this big, tough, buff guy. And he talks about, you know, fear. Well, in his words, fear is BS.
Right.
There's no such thing. Fearless is BS, and there's no such thing as fearless.
Right.
We all have fear.
Of course, yeah.
Grown men, even tough guys, we all have fear. Highest.
That's one of my students from Texas, Johnny Chang.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that and it's a matter of that when you face it, it's courage.
Right, yes.
So what you're doing is not a dumb thing, it's
right.
a courageous thing. So that's the way that people take it. That's courageous that he admitted that.
Yeah.
And even the tough guys that reach out to you, you know, behind the scenes as
yeah.
well.
And that's what I do, like, that's what I do that for. That's what I put myself out for. I'm a very open book when it comes to, like, my addiction, my depression, the things that I go through on a daily basis, because on the outside, people will look at my life and say, oh, you know, great businessman, and you know, he seems to have everything together. He loves to party. He's like, but sometimes I'm hanging by a thread. Sometimes I don't want to get out of bed. Sometimes that ugly depression, heavy blanket, drapes all over me, and it's difficult. But what helps me to get up and push forward is my students. What helps me to get up and push forward is my circle. Is you know, my kids. Like, what's my why? My why are my kids. My girlfriend who loves me and supports me. Like, all these things help me to push forward and be the man that God wants me to be, that God created me. I'm not there yet. I don't think I'm there. I'm not even close to that. But I, because of the healing process and sharing what happened to me as a kid, I'm well on my way. And I'm able to help people. I don't have to become a perfect person, start helping people. I can help people in my broken state as I'm healing. And we can all heal together. And that's why I'm here. That's why I do the things that I do.
Yeah. Because you can only be you.
Right.
You can't be anybody else. You can't be, you know, you can be you as you. We're all recovering from something.
Right.
So
yeah.
For me, it might not be that. And it is, I have a lot of that too.
Sure.
So, you know, my dad was an ex-convict. My dad was not a molester or anything
right.
like that. I can't say that. But there were family members that were.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and it happens in a lot of families.
Yeah.
You know, it just is like this weird thing that happens.
Yeah.
It's not okay. But people don't admit to it
right.
because of the scary, there's a scary thing with that, you know, it's they're going to think that I'm going to go after their children or
right.
they're not going to let me go to church or, you
well,
know.
There was a, so I got to this point where I was as tough and as, you know, I know what I can do physically, that there was a point where I was afraid to see my uncle at a certain point, because something happened to me where I was going through a lot mentally and emotionally. I was going through a divorce and going through a separation where I was very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And my uncle was gonna come back for a funeral or something like that. Mm. And all these emotions, like, I don't wanna see him. Like, I don't, like, I turned into a little kid. It was so weird. I turned into a little kid again.
Yeah,
and then, but then the rage came back and I was like, wait, I'm not a little kid anymore. I'm gonna kill this guy. Like, to the point where the family told him, like, not to come, because they, like, so I was very unstable. But the fact that knowing that he was going to come back, and me for a moment turning into a little kid, a little child, deathly scared. It just made me, I was like, yo, what's happening to you? Like, what's going on? And that was just, again, part of the healing process of releasing all that stuff, letting people know what had happened, and then dealing with it, you know, trying to deal with it in a mature way.
Yeah. It is scary when you feel kind of out of control like that. I know. Been there a little bit too. So I have a cheeky little question I want to ask you. Okay. So so would you rather eat tacos or burgers?
Tacos.
Yeah, tacos all the way. Alrighty. So tell us a little bit about this. Okay, this little teenage robbery.
So I ran away from home. I was 15, 16, something like that. I went to my cousin's house, and we had no money. You know, I didn't have any money. Like, my money ran out very, very fast.
Yeah.
And my cousin told me, hey, his sisters had just purchased guns. Like, hey, my sister and her friend just bought some guns. I go, let's go rob somebody. Like that was like that was my mindset. Let's go rob somebody. We take the guns. We were driving around San Diego, and we ended up in Point Loma, and I thank God it ended the way it did, because the cops saw us right away. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. We were looking to rob like a hooker or something. We didn't know, right? So we're in Point Loma, and the cops just kept seeing us go back and forth, driving back and forth. And then we see some guy at an ATM. We pull over. Oh, look at this kid. He's a young kid at the ATM. Mm-hmm. We pull over to the ATM, and we pull out with our guns, and he turns around, and we saw his face. His face wasn't looking at us, his face was looking at the cops behind us. And there was like 15 cop cars there. They had already called backup. They knew what we were doing. And so my cousin was an adult at the time, so he goes to jail, and I went to a camp on Juvenile Hall for like a year and a half. And then through there, you know, I met all these other people, and then I got out, and I ended up doing all that other stuff that I ended up doing.
And you talked about some of the training that you do. You talked about some kidnapping.
Right. So there was a portion of my life where I was a bodyguard and the head kidnapper for drug dealers.
Yeah.
And so without, like,
you don't have to name the names.
Yeah, I'm not going to. But I never hurt anybody that was a civilian, or somebody who didn't deserve it, or somebody who didn't owe money or something like that.
For me,
I am at peace.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm at peace with everything I've done, because in my mind,
I
never did anything to somebody who wasn't in the war, who wasn't in the game. So I never hurt a kid. Mm-hmm. I never hurt an innocent person. In my mind, the people that I took care of, in my mind, deserved everything that they got.
I get it. So you know what? I'm so like amazed. Like, I'm just like amazed at the story. I get so excited. You know, I only knew a little bit about you. I didn't know all this stuff.
Right.
This is like all the good stuff.
Well, it's the old stuff, right? It's the old stuff that.
Yeah.
You know, thank God that I was able to go through all that stuff and learn a lot about life, learn a lot about loyalty, learn a lot about what a real man type is, like what a real person is. Like, you only have, at the end of the day, you only have your word. You know. And I met some really good friends in that. You know, there's some friends that I'm never gonna see again. But like I said, I wouldn't change my life. You know, if God said, hey, Elias, pick your life, I'll give you your life all over again. Yeah. I wouldn't change it, because today, I'm the man that I am today. I'm the person I am today because of everything that's happened to me, because of all my struggles, because of all my failures.
Yeah.
I'm the person like I am today because of all that. So I would not change it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make my life any easier because There's no growth in that. Yeah. If there's no struggle, there's no growth. Yeah. I truly believe that.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I'm a man full of growth because I've gone through so much struggle.
Yeah.
But I have a lot more to go through, and I want to deal with it in a better way now.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I thank God because there were people like you when I was a young juvenile who did an intervention.
Right.
So it was in National City. It was David Chigos High School in the 80s. And it was a team of brothers that were ex-Marines, and one was an ex-cop.
Mm-hmm.
They developed a school, which was called Mind. It was David Chigos High School, but the curriculum was Mind, Body, Values.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some of the stuff that you talk about, a lot of the training as well, because for us, it was boxing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And we went through the boxing training, but it was life training.
Right.
Like,
so one of the things that I do with my At-Risk Youth program, I work with the San Diego Police Department and the Second Chance, and then I'm also in talks right now with through the National City Clergy Association. So
yeah.
Since I joined the National City Clergy Association, last month we ended up feeding the National City Police Department. Mm. We brought them a taco
That's
truck.
Awesome.
We brought them food, just to say thank you. Like, you know, especially nowadays where there's very little support for our law enforcement. It's a thankless job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I support law enforcement 100%. We do a lot of free training for them. But the Clergy Association, what we did is we bought the taco truck for them. We just showed up and supported them.
Yeah.
And through that process, I met a liaison there, and we're working on getting a second chance in the National City Police Department.
Wow.
And what we do is, if you know, if there's an at-risk youth, someone who's been in juvenile hall before or been in jail for something very minor, or they're in a gang, and they're in a gang because they don't want to be, but they have to be, right?
Yep.
And so what are the prime times for these guys to get in trouble is after school. 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, when they're done with school and but now there's no school sometimes for these kids, right?
Yeah.
So what we do, what I do with my program is I bring them in, like I said, one of my degrees is in counseling. I mentor, I counsel them for free. We give them free training. We give them lifetime membership, Share My Academy. We provide all the training, all the gear for free.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can just pluck one out and save one from going to jail for the rest of his life or committing a crime that will adversely affect the rest of his life, then my job is done. You know, and so we're looking to implement that in National City like we have at the San Diego Police Department.
Yeah, I know a group of people that our lives were saved definitely from that stuff, you know. So I understand, you know, what the things that you say and what you want to do with the 501c3 and stuff. I love that. Love that. You also deal with combat veterans.
Yeah, so another
like that too. That's
another
really
good. We live in San Diego.
Yeah.
It's a military town. We live in San Diego, it's a military town. And you know, there's so many combat veterans that are dealing with PTSD here that if you're dealing with PTSD, right now and you're a combat veteran, we're gonna give you free training, lifetime membership, right? We also have a mental health therapy group that's done by a clinical psychologist every Sunday at 10 a.m. That's free for them, right? It deals with depression, anxiety, and PTSD. And we just love on them. We give them, this is their second home. So when they're in the military, they're part of a brotherhood. When they get out, a lot of times they lose that sense of brotherhood. And when they get here on the mat, they're a warrior. And so they get that warrior mindset back. And that's what they're looking for. You know, they're looking for structure. They're looking for that warrior mindset.
Yeah.
They're looking for a brother's going to take care of them. And then it's all free. My nonprofit pays for everything for them.
Wow,
so
that's
and that's been such a huge blessing because I'm going to go ahead and use his name because he's like our poster child. His name is Robert, right? Just use his first name. But he's like we call him Grandpa Robert. So he was the poster child, right? So he came into the program, and now he's one of our coaches. Like, he came through the program full circle. And he started coming to the program, getting the free training, coming to the group therapy sessions and the men's Bible study. And fast forward 3 years, something like that, 4 years later, he's one of our kids' coaches now. So, you know,
wow,
and it's like, and it's crazy. And it's amazing to see him through all the struggles and to see him now as a coach, still dealing with stuff, but like in a much better place. And like,
that's awesome.
I look at him and I'm like, that's, you know, like even though he's a lot older than me, I'm like, yes, you know, like,
that's something that you're really excited
about.
I'm proud of that. Yeah, you could tell in your body language, you're just like, that's good. I think my cousin comes here, Johnny Lopez.
Yeah,
maybe
older, younger,
older.
Maybe we have 300 students here,
he's a war veteran as well. Okay, Here's another cheeky question.
I have to stop looking at myself.
Okay, what's the most beautiful place you've ever been?
The most beautiful place I've ever been? My grandmother's backyard.
Oh, that's, you made me cry. Yeah. People love their grandmas. Okay, let's go back into, you got survivors of rape.
Yeah, so just again, the program is if you're a female survivor of rape or domestic violence,
yeah,
we empower you here, right? Yeah. We have the group therapy sessions as well,
yeah,
and you get free training. And so it's like, you know, you come to the class, you learn how to defend yourself,
mm-hmm,
but more importantly, learn how to defend yourself, you become a part of a family. Yeah. And now it's not a girl with a bunch of guys, it's a girl with a bunch of brothers, you know, a bunch of uncles,
you know,
here.
I needed to hear that because, yeah, like, I have a friend that they're, they keep telling me to come to jiu-jitsu, and I'm like, I am not gonna be rolling around with some guys.
Oh, no, no, yeah. So a lot of times, when this is what happens, a lot of times a woman will come into class, and they'll know that they need the self-defense. They know that it's important for them.
Right.
But they come to class, and it's primarily a male-dominated sport, a culture.
Yeah.
And so they walk in, they see all these guys, and they're like, no, this guy's gonna hit on me, that guy looks weird, that guy stinks, or whatever,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, that's exactly.
Yeah, and that's usually what happens. But at the end of the day, the culture that I've created around here is, it's one of family. So when a girl comes in, I'm like, hey, this is your sister, this is your mom, mm-hmm, this is your aunt, this is somebody like that,
yeah,
treat her like that.
Yeah.
And so now when the girl comes in, she has a bunch of brothers, you know, she has a bunch of uncles or
yeah,
a father figure or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's,
mm-hmm,
what I've cultivated here. And so when you're in the program, nobody knows you're in the program unless you want to share. So
okay.
I have, yeah,
oh,
so I have people that are here,
oh,
training.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah,
that's,
yeah,
a good,
yeah,
point.
Oh,
that's,
of course, yeah. So,
important.
Yeah, so nobody, you know, nobody wants to come out and say, oh, guess by the way, I got molested, or by the way, so, you know, it took me 20, something, yeah, 30 years, right? But you do have these, you do have women and these men that are so empowered, that are so thankful for what we've done for them,
okay,
that they're willing to share their story. And so there's people here in the program that people think, oh, this guy or this girl is just a paying customer.
Okay.
And nothing could be for, they're actually in the program. You know, they don't, they just don't come to the group therapy session. They come, they go to their own, because they want it that way. So one thing I do require,
mm-hmm,
is that if you're in the program, you're either coming to our group therapy sessions or you're going to some type of counseling on your own. But
yeah,
you have to be involved in some type of professional counseling, because this alone won't do it. You have to, there has to be different avenues. You know, you're,
okay,
required to go to some type of church, you know,
okay,
synagogue, something spiritual, mental, and physical,
okay,
is our philosophy here. So physically, we build you up. Mentally with the program, and then spiritually in some type of, you know, church setting or synagogue or mosque or whatever it is that you believe in.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But those are the three pillars that we believe in my nonprofit.
That's good.
That you have to be trying to maximize to the fullest potential,
yeah,
to be the best version of yourself that you can be.
Yeah, that's, wow, that's really good, super good. Okay, another cheeky question. What's the strangest thing in your refrigerator?
The strangest thing in my refrigerator? I just threw away like I just threw away like 3 months, a 3 month old like hot dog that was there. I was so hungry, and I asked my girlfriend, I was like, hey, is there any food? And I opened up the refrigerator, and there was like, and she goes, does it smell? And I looked at it, and I was just like, it was like gluey, and just,
yeah,
and was, that was probably the worst thing that I saw, and I just threw that away. And I was like, so as of now, nothing, but as of this morning, it was that nasty looking hot dog.
Yeah, the last guy was like butter. It's,
yeah,
butter.
Yeah, it was like a hot dog, and then it was like, it looked like there was glue, like, you know, it gets all slimy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
that was not, it's not a good picture.
That's funny. All right, so is there anything else that you want to share as we start to wind down a little bit?
Sure. I really just want to get my programs out there. You know, being a small nonprofit, it's very difficult to get donations, but more importantly, it's difficult to just get my name out there, right?
Yeah.
So if you know somebody who's a combat veteran dealing with PTSD,
mm-hmm,
if you know somebody who's an at-risk youth, if you know somebody who's a female who is a domestic violence survivor or a rape,
yeah,
survivor, right?
Yeah.
If you know some, so, one of the newest programs that we have is, I had a student who dealt with depression, and he ended up losing his life about a year and a half ago. And so what we decided to do in honor of him was to have a program that if you're a young adult and you're dealing with depression, we do the exact same thing for you. So you don't even have to be clinically depressed. You don't even have to be diagnosed, right?
Okay.
But if you're a parent out there and you have a son or daughter, a young adult or teen that you feel is depressed, bring them in and we'll assess them, and then we'll give them free training. You know, Gloria, bodies in motion tend to stay in motion. So if you're right, especially now during COVID,
yeah.
if they've been at home all day long on Zoom and doing work, and they haven't experienced vitamin D through the sun or interaction with other people, that takes a toll on us mentally, spiritually, and physically.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's anybody out there that's dealing with depression, young adult, teen, bring them in and we're gonna give them free training. We're here. My business is here in Chula Vista, not to take, but to give back. And that's how we're giving back, is by these programs. And just helping people. So if you know anybody in those stages, give them my information, have them come through, and we'll take care of them.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. That is just probably one of the best podcasts I've ever had. Yeah, that was great. I loved that you just went there. You just went there, you know? And it's a courageous move to just share from your heart, to share, you know, the real, you know, stuff that people go through.
Yeah.
You know, because we're all recovering, you know, we all have issues. You know, no one is exempt from the recovery stuff or the issues in life. We all have them. And sometimes we're living in this kind of this you know, social media world where we only show that good part.
And yeah. I think social media can be so harmful to people because, especially for young adults and young people, you see people, you know, like these influencers and, oh, this person, look at this life I want to live. And like, people will look at my life and say, oh, this guy has, you know, 7 schools and this thing. You know, my instant success took 20 years, right? So people, we need to be very careful. And that's why it's so important for me to be as real as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, one time one of my students said, Professor, I think you're a little bit too real. and I think you might scare off some people with your realness. And I totally get that, but I'd rather be an open book and lose some people, you know, than be an open book and really save people. Like, that's what I want. I want to be an open book and save people. Yeah. If I lose some people because I was too open, okay, I understand that, but at what cost? I'm not gonna, at what cost? I'm at this point where I know I have a short, like, I'm 45, so I never thought at that age when I was doing all those things, I never thought I'd make it to 30.
Yeah.
I never thought I was gonna make it to 30.
Yeah.
And so now being 45, I'm like, oh my God, this is extended time. God granted me extended time. You know, I should be dead or in jail for the rest of my life for the things that I've done.
Yeah.
And so now I'm trying to utilize these last remaining years or however many years God has left for me, and trying to do the best I can for Him.
Yes.
And that's it. That's all anybody can do.
Yeah. This is your life.
Yeah.
So you want to do life with people who get you.
Yes.
Who are wanting to be here, to who appreciate, you know, that they get to be here.
And even with people who don't get me, because I feel like even if I could rub off a little bit of them, even if they don't get me right away, in 10 years, they'll be like, you know what? Now I know what that guy was trying to do for me. You know? And it'll work. And it'll work, you know.
Awesome. You're awesome. Give me a high five.
Thank you.
Elias Gallegos, everybody. That was a great interview.
Thank you, Gloria. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming out. Thank you.
Bye, guys. We're going to tune out for now. Love you. Oh, and peace out. Bye, guys.